I'm Joni De Winter.
And I'm Susan Grant.
And we are part of Bell Street,
who are an events band and production company.
And we're here talking to you about our fun and failures.
On our journey from being scared to doing it anyway.
Always takes us about eight episodes of that to get it right. And then when we do the next season, we'll forget it again.
It's like learning lyrics, isn't it? Yeah. You think you know them until you open your mouth.
In our episode 4, we suggested that people might want to ask us questions and that we would go out on the hunt for questions in return from people we've interviewed. We just thought it'd be fun to answer some questions because, you know, no one wants to interview us on their podcast. So we thought we'd interview ourselves. So we thought maybe we'd get 2 or 3 responses, but we've had quite a lot.
We have had quite a lot of very interesting questions.
We did ask our family, but none of them responded.
No. Never mind.
Thanks, guys.
So we just thought we would have a look at some of these questions and they might inspire us to talk about something different as well.
They might.
We haven't really looked at them properly, so it'd be interesting to see what the answers are going to be.
Well, we cut them up and put them in a bowl.
Yes.
But we haven't discussed our thoughts, have we? And we've written each other a question to ask as well, which we don't know what that is.
It will be a morning of surprises.
How exciting. Should we dive straight in?
Let's dive straight into the bowl.
Okay. Well.
Oh, I go first. Right. This is a good note. Nelly thinks it's a treat. Okay, here we go. First question. So this is from one of our long-suffering fans who follows us around and helps us out with a lot of different gigs. So Paul has asked, what has been the single most important motivation sustaining you both as you have developed Bell Street over the last few years? What keeps you doing what you do? I didn't read that very well, but we get the gist.
What has been the single most
important motivation sustaining us?
Money. Actually, that's not true, because if it was, we wouldn't be doing it.
Or we'd be really, really rich.
Yeah. What do you think?
I think that finding that click that we had from the beginning has kept us going.
Yes.
Between us as performers and friends, but we weren't friends before we started
weren't
singing.
Friends, no. I think I agree with you. And also, definitely one of my motivations, I think you feel the same, is the need to be creative and to have something creative in my life that's evolving and changing. And so for me, having us and having this business means that I can have creativity and something meaningfully creative in my life. I need to have something creative in my life, and I was sad without it. And now we have it.
And making it a job as well, where we do get paid.
Yeah.
Here and there.
And the other motivation is I would let you down.
Yes, you would.
I would. And isn't that my biggest fear? But I think it is motivating having...
Yes, another person to show up for.
Yeah, exactly. That's definitely a motivating factor when you don't feel like it. Good question, Paul. Thank you. Oh, my go.
Take one out of the bowl. Dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun. Is that the theme music?
Yes.
Okay, so Jess Luck,
yes,
the lovely, lovely artist who we did an interview with in episode
2 or 3,
has asked us a couple of questions, and this is one of them. How do you incorporate experimentation and risk-taking into your work? Which is a very good and mature question.
Absolutely. Experimentation.
Well, I think that we definitely... have, when we're trying to write something, we try and have fun and let go of the seriousness of it and just see what happens, see what comes out.
Yeah, we have allowed ourselves to go to the extreme with certain things, knowing that we can pull it back as well. I'm talking about the comedy, trying to be funny, what we put in our set lists as well, what we can sing, what we shouldn't sing.
Yeah. And I think because it's a safe space.
Yeah.
Just giving everything a good go, really. And then not being disappointed in ourselves if it doesn't work for us, because not everything's going to work for us. You know, sometimes, even just in your most basic level with songs, we'll just write a big list of things we want to try and try them, and then in a safe space where we can just have a go.
Yeah. But also with that, we've got such a brilliant support network that I think we really felt in the summer when we did The Fringe, and we just put this bizarre cabaret together. Was excellent, but we sold out and people were there to support us. We didn't even really know what we were going to do. We had massive costume malfunction on the stage, and everyone thought it was part of the show.
Yeah,
we'd forgotten in our dress rehearsal that we would have battery packs on.
Yes, yeah, so the striptease that was supposed to be a joke actually ended up being. Kind of a striptease.
We couldn't do our dresses.
Should we come on half-dressed?
And there was nowhere to hide, well, apart from a screen. But we felt completely supported. But that was...
Not physically.
That was a big risk, that show. And since then, we have taken more risks by putting on, obviously, the cabaret recently, which... was just full of ridiculousness and fun.
And I think the more you take risks and you realise the world doesn't end if it goes wrong or if you end up half naked, then you're kind of more excited to take more risks. We've definitely learnt that.
Yeah.
And I think... also just knowing that if you risk something and you're trying it out, that it doesn't mean you have to commit to it, and that's what you do now. Mm-hmm. We've definitely learned that.
Yeah.
To be less rigid in our expectations of when we try something new, which I think gives you the freedom, definitely gives us the freedom to experiment
and evolve.
Yeah. We're not the same people we were 6 years ago, and we're not the same act.
No. So this is from the lovely Amber at Fold.
She's very kindly left us a voice note.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Amber from Fold here. My question is, have you mastered the spreadsheet yet? It's a thing of beauty.
Have you mastered the spreadsheet?
Have we mastered the spreadsheet, Amber? No.
But we did start one.
Well, we did our accounts properly.
Yeah.
For a start this year.
Yep.
And we
we always do our accounts properly.
No, we don't. We always do our accounts. But we did like a proper...
Yep.
We didn't just hand everything to someone this year. Well, we did, but with a spreadsheet attached.
Yeah.
And then after we listened to Amber in season one, in our interview with the ladies at Fold, and Natalie from Sorelle, she loves a spreadsheet as well. Mm-hmm. We did decide, in our biggest project from this year was the Bad Cabaret. So we decided to implement a spreadsheet for that.
Yep.
And I think we would have got quite out of control without that spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Because we get a bit kind of budget happy, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
We like a costume.
Mm-hmm.
And paraphernalia.
Yes.
And so it we haven't mastered it, but we're beginning to appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll probably implement more spreadsheets
next year
in 2025.
Yes. Let it be the year of the spreadsheet.
Oh. Okay.
But no, we are working on it, Amber. Thank you. And Natalie, yes. Thank you for your advice.
Let's just take that, put that there. That's my question. Rip this one up. Oh, we have another voice note here from Adam from the Brave and Determined charity, which was episode one. And we have really enjoyed working with them this year. So thank you for sending in a question. And the question is as follows.
Hey, Bell Street. So it's Adam from the Brave and Determined. I'm not going to say which Adam it is because it could be Adam or the other Adam. But then I don't think anyone actually knows which Adam is Adam and which is the other Adam. So there you go. So it's Adam from the Brave and Determined. My question is, why are you called Bell Street?
Why are we called Bell Street? Well, for those of you that don't know, in Shaftesbury, where we live, there is a street called Bell Street.
And on that street is an arts centre.
And once upon a time, when we first met properly in the upstairs room, talking about what we might sing in a cabaret variety, not cabaret the musical, cabaret variety show that was being put on by some of the brilliant people at the arts centre. And we were going to sing together.
Yeah, we got put together.
We did.
And when we were coming to picking a name, we had a planning meeting about what we were going to look like, what did we want to sound like, what did we want to, where did we want to be, all those sorts of things. And we obviously had to pick a name. And I can't remember, can you remember any of the other ones that were thrown around?
I can't really. I remember we talked about Bell Street and putting the E on the end, and then we were going to have a big red lips on it or something, weren't we?
Yeah.
But it was suggested that we were called Bell's Treat or something.
Bell's Treat, yes, that was Mark. Mark Blackham. Because it could be Bell's Treat.
Yes.
Which would have been a too clever link, I think. So we called ourselves Bell Street, mm-hmm. added an E on the end to make it sound a bit classier, I suppose.
So it's not a wonderfully exciting story, but it's stuck, and we are here. So
the brand exists.
Yeah. Our question is from Nikki, who is also known as Office Lady at the Brave and Determined. We also have a voice note from her. So,
hey girls, it's Nikki, or Office Lady from the Brave and Determined. So my question is, I remember years ago coming to the Fringe and watching you, and there was three of you. So what happened to the third member of Bell Street?
Well, you make it sound like we killed her. So at said cabaret,
yes,
we were deciding what to sing together, and Susan and I sang a song together, and the third member of Bell Street was called Charlie Greenwood, and she wanted to sing a song of a trio from Witches of Eastwick, and I believe she said she wanted to sing with you and with me.
Yes.
And that was really exciting because it was nice to be picked for a team.
Yeah, it was. It was great. And
especially because none of us knew each other very well. I'd been in a play with Charlie.
Well, I'd only met her. I'd just really arrived in Shaftesbury.
Yes,
in
but September. You were the professional. I was. Susan, the professional.
Professional and what?
I don't know, but that's all I knew about you. Susan, she's a professional.
But yes, I'd been in the pantomime, and that's where Charlie had seen me.
Yeah.
Attempting to sing.
Yeah, so she, it was her idea for us to sing together, and we got put together, sang, what's it called?
I Wish I May.
I Wish I May from Witches of Eastwick.
Yeah.
And our voices blended really well together.
They did, but if you watch the video back.
It's awful.
We look absolutely petrified.
We do, we're all stood there like we're in a shooting lineup.
Yeah. What? It sounds lovely, but the three of us look petrified. It's so funny.
Well, we were.
We were petrified.
That's another story.
Yeah. Yes.
So we met and we discussed the name and we set some goals, and it was really great, and we we were a trio for quite a while, and so we would do trio gigs. Susan and I would do some duo gigs, and basically, we do touch on this on season one, but after lockdown, there was a kind of shift in availability, priorities, and
life,
what people were able to commit to. And so Susan and I continued on as a duo, and Charlie is a very successful vocalist in her own right. You can find her in many, many places singing all different sorts of things. She's got a wonderful voice, and if you want to look her up, she's Charlie Greenwood vocalist. And yeah, so we didn't kill her off.
We didn't, no. And she's, again, life changes. Life has had all sorts of weird changes for all of us. And she is steaming ahead now as a solo vocalist. So it's really lovely to watch everyone in their place.
And, yeah.
You know.
And we look back on the time as us as a trio with great funness. We did some really fabulous projects together. We did... apart from, I think we sounded great together. I started our musical journey together. We wrote a parody musical called The Secret Life of a Part-Time Diva, which would have toured had it not been for COVID.
Yep.
And we did some brilliant online collaborations during COVID, which if you dig deep enough on the internet, are there. Questionable editing skills, but brilliant ingenuity.
Some brilliant Christmas ones as well.
So that's that story. Hi, Charlie. Okay, our next question is from Carolyn from the Truckle Truck.
The Truckle Truck.
Who would your dream special guest to sing with be for Bell Street, and why? Well, my dream special guest would be the same height as us. So everyone we seem to sing with seems to be smaller than us and stand in the middle. And as two tall girls who were always on the back row.
Yeah.
It's a trauma we try and live out. I love that we're the same height. It makes me so happy.
Yes.
Who would it be then?
I think I kind of worry
they'd be better than me. Do you know, I really love the combination of a female voice and a male voice. Mm-hmm. I think I'd love to do something with us and a male voice because I love the way that sounds. We did experiment a bit at the cabaret, but we were very much backing singers for our guests at the cabaret who were men. But I'd love to do something on an equal footing.
Yeah.
I think it'd be great. I don't think I'd be fussed about who the man was. But I like the sound.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something really beautiful about the combination.
And then if you're going dream, I don't know, I think I'd have to do some inner child work and not be so intimidated by whoever I think is an amazing singer.
This one is another one from Jess Luck. Thank you for sending a few over. And they're also all very good.
Yes.
So she has said, how do you handle criticism or feedback on your work?
Oh, I'm glad she said on our work.
Yeah. Just generally.
Generally not well.
Yes. On our work.
That's a big journey for us in terms of feedback. From the very beginning, we've been quite needy for feedback, haven't we?
Yeah.
So I guess more affirmation from other people. From our very first gig, when we first started Bell Street, we invited people we knew to come and see our first gig and give us feedback. We kind of needed, I think we needed people to say,
you can do this.
You can do this, yeah. And then when we were doing Who the Musical, we consistently were trying to show it to people, weren't we? for like, is this insane?
Yeah.
Yes.
But what we have realised is that actually this last year, we haven't tried to show anyone anything.
No.
We've just gone, yeah, great, we'll do that. Yeah, we'll do this. And then gone, oh, no one knows anything about this.
No one checked that for us.
Is this ridiculous? So I think, it. I mean, we do very much care what people think, in the sense that we want to be professional at all times, and we want to give our very best as performers and artists. But I think we're sort of finding a comfortable groove with what we know we can do.
Well, who we are.
Who we are. And then I guess if there's something that's maybe a little bit more out of our comfort zone, maybe we'll ask for someone's advice, or if we're stuck with writing something. But
if I know the universe, which I don't,
no,
but from what I've learned from what she throws at us, I think it's been an important lesson for us to have that kind of grounding in who we are and that confidence in what we make. We don't have to check or have permission from anybody to do that. And then probably the next thing we'll have to learn is how to take constructive criticism, yeah, and how we get that and how we, you know, facilitate that for ourselves, mm-hmm, in a way that is constructive and professional and will help us grow, but not in a need for someone to tell us we're doing the right thing.
Yeah. And again, I think we touched on it in the first season of when we have comments from people, which is brilliant to hear what people think. But sometimes it is that, oh, you're quite good. You really, you should do this professionally. And we're like,
we're trying our best.
So it's taking that sort of feedback and going, good, well, it's the first time they've seen us and we're not what they expected. And with Hugh, the musical, we had to actually take quite a lot of random feedback.
Yes, because at the end of every performance we asked for people's feedback, which, yes, mainly was so we could kind of use it for promotional purposes. But we were interested. That, yeah, stemmed from the initial performance where we were genuinely interested. Well, we still are genuinely, yeah, interested, but we had a real need to know what people were thinking about it. And yeah, there's some interesting things written down, aren't there? Okay, my go?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if people are interested in this or not. Yeah, we're just chatting away about ourselves. Okay, this question is from Connor Smith, who is a local musician, and he was part of our Bad Cabaret,
mm-hmm,
and is a lovely person that we've enjoyed getting to know better this year. Well, we better say that about everybody now.
Yeah. Question that you have there from Connor. Has there been a moment when gigging where you have completely misread a situation? He goes on to say, for example, you thought it was a normal gig, but it turned out to be a 60s night. This actually happened to me, he says.
Okay.
A little bit of insight into Connor's life.
Yeah. So where a gig where you thought...
So you've just misread the situation, or maybe you've just not been told all the details.
Well, we have a very rigorous booking process, and we do like to chat with people. Mm-hmm. And because we are, I know you don't like this phrase, an events band for occasions and things, it's quite important to us to know what the theme is, what the dress code is,
yeah,
what people are expecting from us. So generally, I was struggling to think of an example of when that had happened, but I thought of one just now.
Have you?
Do you know what I'm going to say? Or not? See if you think of it.
No, but once you start talking... Go on then.
Well, we talk about it all the time. And it was more ignorance than a lack of research. And we were at a ball.
Okay.
As a trio, we were at a Christmas ball. Mm-hmm. I can't be any more specific than that. And we completely misread what that ball would be like.
Mm-hmm.
We'd made a few assumptions. It was quite early on in our...
Yes.
Maybe a year in. And it was quite a big event for us. It was really important to us. But we'd made a couple of assumptions about how it would be. And we were fully prepared for that.
Yes.
and had extensively rehearsed and been very thorough about communicating with DJs, mm-hmm. about set lists.
Put together a brilliant set list.
Yeah.
Had excellent tech with us, all sorted.
And unfortunately, we had underestimated how off their face everyone was going to be at this particular event.
And that there were several organisers, not just one.
Yes. And only one had communicated with us, and the others had not wanted to book us.
Apparently.
So there was a lot more at play than just us, but that, I say, in terms of misreading a situation, we were asked to stop mid-set, weren't we?
Yep.
And that's three very strongly opinionated women with bad faces for letting everybody know exactly
what
you
think. Well, the worst thing was the person that asked us to stop went and spoke to the
men
team.
The men. Because obviously they were in charge.
And told us to stop. They would have got a very different response if they'd spoken to us, I think.
They would.
But anyway, it was humiliating.
It was actually, we were treated quite badly at that gig. Mm. And it was a strong learning curve from that.
It was.
From that point, we then were much more rigorous with how the information we get from people about what they're expecting, when we're playing, who's following us, if they run over what our policy is. We have a cancellation policy.
Yeah. I think we also have got a bit more confidence to speak with whoever's organising it and possibly suggest, if they don't know, how we think, where we would slot into the evening as well. So that they get the best experience as well for their guests.
Yes. A lot of the time, people who are organising events are trying to organise a lot of people and a lot of different pieces fitting together. And in our experience, sometimes people are just like, music. Mm. Just music. And then that can go there and that will work fine. And actually, the situation is a lot more nuanced than that. So we have got a nickname for it, and if you DM us, we will tell you the nickname for that particular event.
But we won't put it out.
No. Mm. We're a sweary podcast sometimes, but that is not... I don't think we... Oh, I think we might have used that word, you know, in season one. We, me. So, yes, Connor, thank you for that question.
Mm-hmm. We took the positives from it after we were very deflated for about...
Yeah, well, we recapitulated on that, didn't we?
Recapitulation, yes.
I can say that now.
Mm-hmm. You're good. Practicing. Okay. Ooh, exciting. Okay, well, keeping it positive, from Ben Francis,
another singer-songwriter.
Yes.
Who we've enjoyed getting to know.
Some more than others. Ben Francis, what has been your worst venue experience? Then he goes on to say, maybe you played at a gig where they forgot to book you and you had to play without any power outside the front door of the pub and pretend to sing through the microphone so people didn't think you were a crazy drunk.
Wow.
Thanks, Ben. I presume that's your experience. And I'm really sorry that that happened.
Yes, sir. A crazy drunk.
Well, we did have to do one. Again, we have talked about it. We have talked about the gigs that haven't gone to plan so much when we were told we weren't allowed any power. And we went out of our way to create a set with a guitarist.
And no power.
No power. This, again, was a trio. Turned up and other people had power. We could have... Yeah, and we were told...
Amplification.
Yes, amplification. And we were put right next to the fire pit as well. And I don't know...
Or just a tip, if you're booking a band, don't put them right next to the fire pit.
No, absolutely. It really hurts. Because
that often happens.
Yeah.
We often get put in front of a fire pit,
mm-hmm.
don't we?
Mm.
Well, I can think of... It wasn't a bad venue experience, but this has only happened once... And we styled it out. I don't know what would have happened if it had happened at any other setting. But we were booked for a very small wedding. And we got there and we realised that neither of our mics were working. And we had to... Well, luckily... Well,
yours was. Mine wasn't. The cable wasn't working.
Oh, so it was
working.
One of...
It was my mic.
Yes. So what we decided to do was, as we're both theatre background, is turn the mics off and project.
Yes.
Which isn't advised for an outdoor gig, but...
But it was small.
It was small, and it worked. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of comments saying how beautifully balanced the sound was. But honestly, in another situation, that luck was on our side, really. I can't think of a worst venue. We were always, apart from that aforementioned ball, mm-hmm. we've always been really looked after well. No, we've just had funny venues, really, from the garden tours.
Yeah.
There's always an animal.
Yes.
There's often an animal gate crashing our venue, so a horse or a goat.
Yeah.
Normally a dog.
Yes. Yeah, the goats. I mean, even the goat situation.
Yeah.
At when we did sing just to a couple of goats. Really. I mean, it was a paid rehearsal, as we always say.
Yeah. Try not to sing out pubs. Outside pubs like a crazy drunk.
That sounds... Yeah, not... Ideal evening.
No. This is a second question from The Fold.
Oh, yes.
Let's call them The Fold Girls.
Yeah, from Karen.
From Karen. It's a voice note. So here we go.
Hello, Bell Street. It's Karen from Fold here. My question for you is, what's the most useful takeaway that you've learnt from your podcast interviews in season 1 and 2?
Well, we have both really enjoyed speaking to everybody that we have spoken to so far about their journeys, as we have said before. And it is really inspiring listening to everyone's way of just jumping in to whatever situation, but it's really lovely just to be able to hear people go, yeah, go on, we'll just give it a go.
One of the useful things I would take away is actually just the fact that people listen to the podcasts. Because if you're a creator of anything, seller of tickets to events, maker of podcasts, gigs, trying to get gigs, you will know that you consistently check number of tickets sold, number of downloads, blah, 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 blah. And yet, when you do a podcast and you might check and there's been 2 downloads and it's like, oh. But there always is more than 2. And the fact that, like, people keep listening shows that, I guess my takeaway from that is that however many people out there are people who have, like, a passion for being creative and giving things a go and who are invested in working out how to do that with us.
We love the comments that are left as well,
yeah.
After people have listened to it.
Yeah, and hearing how people have been inspired by a different guest, or if people quote the podcast back to you, that's really nice. Because this was a risk for us, and it still kind of is a risk.
Yeah.
But, you know, we keep making it because, well, we've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So that would be one of my takeaways.
Yeah.
But we genuinely use the advice all the time. Like, I couldn't pick one piece of advice. We do go back, take little nuggets of advice from each person that we meet, and every time we meet a new person and listen to their story.
Yeah.
It's another kick of inspiration.
We did say that actually we're nearly at the point of being able to, like, maybe for next year, do a calendar.
Oh, yes, a calendar of inspirational quotes.
Yeah, that we've had.
Would you like one?
Yeah.
Because I would. Yeah. Whip one up.
Yes. This is, I think, my favourite question.
Okay.
When it came through the other day and we just sort of saw them all come through, short, to the point.
And very this person.
Pete Robson.
Another local singer, songwriter, musician. Tiger.
Yes, he was dressed as a tiger in our cabaret. But his question is, who would win in a fight? I presume that's between the two of us.
I would hope so. Well, it's an interesting question, isn't it? Because does he mean physical or verbal?
Mm-hmm.
Physically, I don't know. I've never had a fight, have you?
No. I haven't. Not a real one.
No. We might have to try that one out.
A stage fight.
stage fight, yeah, but they're choreographed.
They are choreographed, yeah. I could choreograph the fight happily.
Well, then you'd win because you'd be in charge of the choreography. Yeah. But yeah, in some kind of wrestling situation, I don't know who would win.
I don't
win.
Know. Got different strengths.
We have, haven't we?
Yeah.
I'd always like to know if I could fight.
Okay.
Probably can't, can I, if I haven't had one?
Is this, like, I feel that this is some sort of workshop.
I don't know.
To get it out of the system.
Boxing.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to do that, really.
I'm quite competitive, so I think if there was a physical fight, I would give it a good go.
Okay.
But I'd have to be, I have never been motivated to hit anyone. Or take them down. Verbally, on the other hand. Mm-hmm. Well, it'll go one of two ways. Neither of us are great at confrontation.
Nope.
Much rather avoid it, which isn't necessarily a healthy thing. We have had to learn how to disagree.
Yes.
And
broach subjects that actually sometimes you just have to talk about it, don't you, and get it out. And there's an eyebrow and there's a silence.
There is.
It doesn't happen very often, but...
No.
And actually, I think it's when we're either dealing with other people and there's a lot of, whether it's family or we're dealing with a project with lots of other people and they're drawing from us. So we're tired, hungry maybe.
A hunger is a thing.
Just drained. And then someone will say something or do something and immediately there's a nostril flare or an eyebrow.
Mm.
And a silence. It doesn't last for long, though.
No.
I don't know with a verbal fight, though, because I'm absolutely one of those people who has the best lines that will cut and hurt or get to the point. I just don't think about them until the following day.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you?
No, they're all in my head. And I'm like, yeah, why didn't I say that? That would have been brilliant. I don't. I just go silent and put my eyes
I'm
down.
A texter or a letter writer. Mm-hmm. But in the moment, no. I think we're both shut downers, aren't we?
Yeah.
I guess the motivation for us not falling out is that this is too important.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing is... If there was something that ended up being more important than this, I guess we would fall out about it. I don't know, though.
Maybe. But you know what, Pete? We'll let you know.
Oh, yeah. And, or feel free to... don't go down that route. Just... Well, see mud wrestling.
Yeah.
That's not for the Bell Street Christmas party.
No. Oh, gosh. Yes. Yeah, I guess if things are really quiet next year, maybe...
We'll find out, yeah.
We'll just sell tickets to an event.
Yeah.
Who would win?
A roast, but not, like, food kind.
I'd rather not get to that, really.
No, let's just stay friends.
We're better singing.
Yeah.
I don't want to get hurt as well. Even if I fell down.
No, we're too frail and old now. No one wants to have a fall. It's a good question, though.
Anyway.
It's a good question, Pete. Thank you. We could have a thumb war. One, two, three, four. I declare a thumb war. Bow. You got bow.
Oh, bow?
Yeah, stand, bow.
Oh, don't you want...
Fine, Susan won a thumb war.
There you are, you have your answer.
I know, we just won't speak to you for a bit now. She cheated. Oh, is this for me, your question for me?
Yep, if it's my writing, yep.
Do you want to read it to me?
I'll read it to you, okay. That's fine. If you could play any part in any show, a musical or a play, what would it be?
Well, it's no secret that I've always just wanted to be the lead in a musical. And it's a big regret of mine that apart from the one we wrote for ourselves, mm-hmm. I haven't been. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be fussy about what musical it was. But I've always said that I would like to be in Jekyll and Hyde. I'd also love to be in Little Shop of Horrors, one of the... three backing singers, that'd be, but that's not a lead, is it? I would not. So yeah, anything where I got to sing like a brilliant duet with a guy,
yeah,
I just would love, I'd love that. So any of those musicals would be good, but yeah, I just honestly don't think I'd be too fussed. as long as it didn't kind of go against my values. Some of the old, some of the old fashioned musicals have great songs, but I don't really like the moral of the story, so I might struggle with some of the older ones, mm-hmm. where everyone's just a little woman. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, I'd also love to play a lead role in a musical that is traditionally a man, and like give it like a female twist. Mm-hmm. That would be fun. Like, you know, like Javert or Hook, mm-hmm. or Judas. I think that would be fun. I think more women should play those parts. Jennifer Saunders did Hook, didn't she?
She did, yeah.
I imagine she was good at that. But yeah, how about you?
Well, I was going to say, we did Jesus Christ Superstar at my school, which was an all-girls school.
Yeah.
So that was all female.
Yeah.
I was Simon Zelotes.
Yes. Your first major role.
My first major role.
See, I never got...
11.
I never got a part in any of my school musicals. It's just a small... thing that just, you know, I never got.
I didn't get any parts after that.
Did you not?
No. It's only because I went in and did an audition with my cassette tape that my mum had played the backing track on the piano on my cassette and recorded it. And I went in and I was prepared. And everyone else was singing, let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London. I don't know why. But it was big at the time.
It was big. That's a good...
And my drama teacher really liked the fact that I had come in prepared, and I was in year 7 as well.
Yeah.
Didn't normally give parts to people in year 7. So that was lucky for me, but then I was too shy for the rest of the school.
Yeah, I had no confidence really till I was 30.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, apart from... So I was the lead in the musical I wrote for myself in year 5.
Yeah.
And I was a lead in our musical that we wrote for ourselves. But apart from that, not deemed leading lady enough.
It's going off piste a little. But I remember getting my first job after university and going on tour with this children's theatre company. I might have said this before, I don't know. And I was so nervous because I had such little confidence in myself. Even though I'd got the job, I didn't speak to anyone. I was on tour. For 3 months.
You didn't speak to any of the cast.
I could hardly speak to them because I felt so intimidated. It wasn't them intimidating me. It was me being intimidated by the fact I didn't think I was good enough. Mm. Very strange, isn't it?
Yeah. Confidence can be such a crippler.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are parts I could have got if I'd been more confident. Mm. Because it is about talent, but it's also about confidence. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think if you're tall... it goes against you.
Yeah.
We were talking about the nativity the other day, weren't we? Mm-hmm. Neither of us were anyone good in a nativity. Always the narrator.
Always the narrator.
If you're tall and you can read,
yeah,
you're always the narrator. Stood on a bench at the back.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were in Flint Street Nativity together a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. And I did play the part of the person who just wanted to be Mary. I never wanted to be Mary, though.
I loved my wings in that.
Yeah, we should bring that back. And bring those wings back.
The crying scene, I enjoyed that.
Good question, though.
Yeah, anyway, we've gone off. I don't know who my favourite musical is Carousel. Not sure I would particularly want to be the main part in that, but I love the music.
Well, I'm ageing too fast, like too fast. I'm not, like, shrinking. But, like, they get less and less the things you could, you know, the things you could audition for. I mean, what did we say? I'm kind of left with Blood Brothers.
Yeah. Chicago.
Chicago?
Mama.
Oh, right, yeah.
Well, we'll see. You never know what's around the corner.
Yeah, but you're lucky sometimes in Amdram, though.
Yeah.
Because people do turn a blind eye to age. Sometimes. Then those blasted, talented young people come in. I saw it, there was a cabaret once that you did cabaret songs of things you'd never be cast as.
Oh, that's good.
And that's quite a cool opportunity, because some brilliant songs out there that, you know, depending on your culture and your age and your gender, you're never going to be cast as that role, but they're amazing songs to sing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we have digressed.
We have. Waffle, waffle. This is from the lovely Rebecca.
Another person who was part of her.
Yes.
Yeah, local jazz singer and vocal coach.
Yes. Absolutely fabulous lady. And she says, if you had to sing one song and you had to sing it at every gig, what would it be?
Well, when we read that question, we did kind of laugh.
Yes.
Because since the beginning, there are probably a couple of songs we do at every gig. But then I was just trying to think.
I think we probably do Cry to Me. And I don't mind it, because it always sounds good. And people engage with it, and they like it, and they sway to it, or they sing along. Generally, though, 500 Miles goes down well.
It does, doesn't it? And it's a bit off-brand. I don't know, because I do get bored quite quickly. So the best songs, I think, are the ones that have a purpose. So, like, we often will do a sound check with Dream a Little Dream, because it's comfortable and we can get the levels in it quite nicely. But the thought of having to sing a song, I mean, you just got to look at Christmas for an example of how tired you get of Christmas songs. I couldn't commit to it. As soon as I knew it was a commitment, I would want to change it immediately.
Yeah, we were saying that with Christmas, our Christmas set, what have we got now?
Four gigs left.
And then a little busk.
On Christmas Eve. But,
yeah, and then we'll be done with Christmas. We'll be over
very
those,
much
those
so
songs.
Well, our dresses will be done with us. We wear dresses at Christmas, and they're dry clean only, so we just dry clean them once a year. Is that gross? Well, we've told you
no,
now.
No, you can't afford to keep getting them dry cleaned.
No.
But
and they go have pinker.
Yeah.
The fur on it goes pinker every time.
But they also, they do have a bit of space in between the gigs, apart from, obviously, we've just done 5 gigs in 2 days, and we're about to do 3 gigs in a day coming up. So having to put them back on again.
It's like putting
off
on a wet swimming costume. I mean, they're not wet, but it's the same feeling of just...
So by next week, they will be walking their way...
out the door.
To the dry cleaners.
They will.
But they look good.
And, yeah. And that wasn't the question.
It wasn't. No, but a song. Back to the songs.
There's a song that we always want to put in, and we just haven't. Because we always used to sing it when we were drunk karaoke singing. And then we wanted to put it into the cabaret. And we've never been able to do it seriously. And I think we'd both quite like to, which is I Know Him So Well from Chess, the musical. Because it's such like a classic of our age and of our kind of era of musicals. Mm. And it's such a classic female duet. But it's so dated that it's hard to kind of... put in seriously. We've considered adding in puppets, haven't we? Making a parody of it.
Yeah.
We're always trying to fit it into a gig.
The one time we were going to put it in was in Bath, one of our first duo gigs. Do you remember when we did three
the Rotary
sets,
Club? Yeah, that was
and
fun.
And we had different outfits for each one.
Yeah, did we do it then?
No, because I forgot to put it on the iPod.
Oh, see, it's just cursed.
So, but yes, we should do it. I only ever think of, was it Peter Kay that did it as Geraldine? You ever see that?
I remember Geraldine, but I don't remember him doing I Know Him So Well. What, with himself? The Spice Girls did it. Mel and Emma did it. Mel
oh,
C.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, they did I Know Him So Well.
Yeah.
So all the icons.
Well,
but the answer is we've never put that in a gig.
No, and it still wasn't the question.
No.
Sorry, Rebecca. So... no, there isn't one song, but I think there are definitely a couple of songs that we do
very regularly.
Anyway,
moving on. Okay, so this question is from Martin Porter, who has written a couple of songs for us. He was very involved in the cabaret, couldn't have done it without him. He was hilarious in that. So he said, what has been your best and your worst moments of Bell Street performances? Start with worst.
Okay.
Well, we've touched on a few of shit things that have happened. I would say, and I haven't talked about this before, is when I had quite a few gigs, or it's happened quite a bit, where an ex will show up and you're not ready to... And it's about kind of putting on that face of you're performing and you have to still perform and you're looking at, you know, the face of someone who you would rather not be and you've been crying over half an hour before. I think they've been some of my worst gigs, that kind of trying to
get over a situation that's happening before your very eyes and plough through. I mean, it's happened in a few different contexts. Mm. When one of my children was very ill in hospital and stuff, and trying to put that aside and get on. It's kind of what's going on in your head, for me, are the worst gigs. Mm-hmm. Because you can escape a bad venue, or you can kind of explain away that. I mean, for me personally, that would be the worst one.
When there's no interaction from the audience at all. If you're booked as a background act,
yeah,
and you're aware of that completely, it's a bit different. But when you're put on a stage and everyone completely ignores you, it's fine. You just get on and do it. You're there to do it. But there is sometimes it's like, oh.
Well, as a performer, you do feed off the energy in the room a bit, don't you?
You do, yeah.
And if the energy isn't directed anywhere at you, it's a different kind of gig. You have to find it from each other.
Yes. And I think with Hugh, maybe more, we've felt the weirdness.
Yes.
Because of the way it's set out. And I mean, Hugh the musical is just nuts anyway. And we've had some very small audiences, which have been really brilliant audiences, but they can only do so much when there's just a few of you looking at us.
When you need 11 volunteers and there's 8 people in the audience. Yeah. Yes, some of those have just been grin, go for it, do it, smile, get on with it. What about best then?
Oh, I think the Truckle Truck is one of our best. Just the vibe of that fringe. Being outside.
Finally. And that was post-COVID, wasn't it? That was one of our first big crowds.
Yeah, it was great. Everyone was around us and everyone was happy and the weather was good. And yeah, that was a great gig.
The best gigs are when people want to be there. And do you know what I mean? You're not forced on anybody. They've chosen to come. Yeah. They're on board and ready to listen or to accept you as part of their night. They're the best gigs. Mm-hmm. We've just done a series of gigs in, and we had some sponsored gigs that were a church had got sponsorship from different people and sent us into some of the poorer care homes in an area. Not locally. So they'd specifically chosen the care homes that don't get a lot of funding. And although they were emotionally exhausting, because you can't help but look around and really feel empathy, they were very rewarding.
They were, because the gratitude was, I think, what fed it, really. People were so pleased that we were there to sing. And we are jolly. We weren't just
jolly.
We had a couple of slower ones. And we did some carols as well. And it was really lovely seeing everyone's reaction. And the staff as well. Mm. Being able to have that light relief for us going in and being entertaining for a minute.
Yeah, they were so recently. They were that's what I would say. The gigs where people are come and ready to have a good time or excited. Yeah. Anything we do in Shaftesbury, really, because we just have such a wonderful group of people who are kind to us, but seem to be genuinely excited to see what we're doing next. So we like to keep you on your toes.
This is from the lovely Claudia and Deadly as a Female,
who is on our podcast next week.
Yes.
A lovely, brilliant interview with her. Listen out for that.
And she says, who inspires you and do you have any heroines?
There is an S on that.
There is. She's not just asking.
No heroine.
No heroine today, sorry.
So as a duo, I think personally, the question might be different, but like as a duo, we definitely have recently been looking to just the cheesiest comedians you can imagine. We love French and Saunders. Mm-hmm. We love them mm-hmm. because they just seem so authentic.
Yeah.
And don't take themselves too seriously. And they do like old-fashioned comedy.
Yeah.
Is it old-fashioned? What do I mean by that? It's like simple.
Simple, it's to the point.
It's a little bit slapstick.
And again, no one takes themselves too seriously, but it is very clever.
Yes.
Very, very clever.
And Morecambe and Wise.
Yes.
We love a bit of Morecambe and Wise.
We do.
Because we like to look at duos who are doing things that are funny, because we are a duo that are trying to do things that are funny, and it's, you know, it's important to research those things. But Morecambe and Wise, it's again such simple things but so well and so cleverly. They came across as so simple, but do we come across as simple?
I think we do, personally. But also, and actually I pinged up on social media yesterday, Fascinating Aida.
Yes.
If you haven't heard of them, look them up, because they are brilliant, a brilliant trio of fabulous ladies. And they do have a Christmas song that, again, look it up. I don't know.
Again, we can't say that word.
No.
Well, we can, but we're not going to.
Is that the actual title of it?
Yes.
Okay. Look up Fascinating Aida. It's called Try Not To Be A... It's Christmas. insert word there.
Yes. And they are inspiring because they are much older than us. No, but what we went to see them, didn't we? Mm-hmm. 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And what I loved about them is, as you get older than 25, 30, you know, people place such emphasis on, you know, looking a certain way, being a certain way, you know, having a certain amount of, I don't know, sex appeal or whatever. And then as you look forward, you think, well, okay, but how does that all work out as the years go by? In terms of longevity, they've been going. I found a record in a vintage shop from 1981 of Fascinating Aida in the 80s. And they're still doing sellout tours now because they've evolved with who they are, what issues are going on in the country. They're so relevant and so, it feels like they're so authentic that people still are interested in what they're doing. And that's inspiring, because that's what I would like us to be, you know, more than just in a nice dress at an event singing some fun songs, something with some longevity and some creative authenticity and something of interest still to say when we're 50, 60, 70. I don't know how old they are. Don't want to speculate. But I would say the other end of that trio of numbers. And that's why I find them inspiring.
Yeah, well, they are just so very clever and comfortable on stage with their performance, with each other.
And we loved, didn't we, the fact that it wasn't a gig, but it wasn't a musical.
Mm-hmm.
It was a performance with a story. There was movement. There was a point to everything they did. But it wasn't a play or a musical. And that's something we'd love to develop, where people came to see us for that kind of experience. So we need to get songwriting.
We do. And then I think people like Mischief.
Yes.
Theatre. Is that what they're called? That's...
Yeah, Mischief Theatre. Yeah.
Again, the clever comedy, which is so slick, but is all made to look as if it's all terribly wrong and all falling apart. And that's the only way comedy works, is when it's really, really well done and well rehearsed.
They're the kind of three groups of people we... Four groups of people we kind of turn to for inspiration, aren't they, when we're looking at, well, how did they do that? what if, or we watch something and think, oh, we could try something that's inspired by that. And that is how art works. You have to be inspired by other people. We never feel like we're copying people. Mm. You have to look at how would Bell Street do that, and how, what can we learn from how they're doing it? We would never be like French and Saunders or Morecambe and Wise or Mischief Theatre, but we do try and, or Fascinating Aida, but we do try and take elements of them. Mm. You have to check out all of those people. They're brilliant. I'd love to have, I think definitely one of the most inspiring things is, and what a lot of those, apart from Mischief maybe, have in common is the longevity of their working relationship, I think is really inspiring, because it's so intense working together, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And we've only worked together for 6 years, and I would love to cultivate something that meant that we were working together for a very long time and could keep it exciting for people who were following us, and for people who, for us, mm-hmm. for people, yeah. who are us. And that's what Morecambe and Wise did. That's definitely what French and Saunders have done.
Yes.
And that's what Fascinating Aida have done as well.
Do you read it to me?
Okay, this is my question to Susan. There was a lot of pressure with the, we meant to think about them yesterday, but we didn't. Too much other things to think about. Susan.
Yes.
Grant. Mm-hmm. What do you think you would be doing if Bell Street had never happened?
Gosh.
I mean, professionally, or you can go personal if you like. Doesn't have to be serious.
No. I don't know. Because it started quite soon into me moving here, and what was I doing? I'd started working at the cafe just to sort of, well, I said I'd work for free because I just wanted friends. But no, I started working at the cafe, so, and then just got involved with the Arts Centre. So, and then this just grew, and I had been waiting for a creative outlet after not really doing anything for a while because of children and stuff. So I don't know. I don't know if I'd have had the confidence to go back into performing again without something like this happening.
Mm.
I would have definitely stayed with the Amdram side, which I have done anyway, in different ways. And obviously it has been a weird few years of different businesses working in different places, which none of them have stuck. Well, I mean the businesses that I've taken on and stuff. So, I don't know.
Mm.
Which is boring, isn't it?
That just means you did the right thing.
It does mean I did the right thing. Yeah. Well, again, because you have to keep showing up for the other person.
Yeah.
As well. And creating a new project. And after spending so many years of trying to audition for things and trying to be in things and sometimes being in stuff, yeah, it's... I did get the odd job. You know, I wasn't always only auditioning, but desperately wanting this to be my job. Now it is, and we're creating, and that's really fun. So I'd like to think that I would have been able to do it somehow, but I don't know how that would have worked.
No.
What about you? Question over to you.
Yeah, I think... I mean, it was a mean question, really, because it's hypothetical, isn't it? But I think that was how the three of us came together, because we were all at that point where we were craving something to fulfil the creative void.
Yeah.
Because in lots of ways, Bell Street has given me a ton of confidence and a ton of purpose that I didn't really have, and a focus that I haven't had. And because of, you know, the things I've had to address in myself to be part of Bell Street, I've changed as a person. So kind of the person I was when Bell Street started doesn't exist anymore.
Mm.
So I wonder, I don't know what decisions she might have made.
No.
But I don't think she would be
I don't think I would have the confidence. Again, it's like the key part, I guess, is having the other people, the other person, and the accountability and the safe space.
Yes.
So you see a lot of people doing it on their own, and I admire them so much.
Yeah.
Because I genuinely, could I? I don't know.
No. And it's having that energy, because both of us have run our own businesses in other things as well. And there's a time when it's really good.
Mm.
And you go for it. But I think we're both quite similar in that there is a bit of a lifespan, unless it stays interesting. And I guess working together, we can keep that idea thing going.
And life is hard, always, it seems.
Mm.
And on your own, when you're running a business, you know, the things I've done on my own, life has then got very hard. Something hard has happened. And doing it by yourself is too overwhelming. Mm. And so we've had tough things happen to us whilst this has happened, been going. But because the other one can kind of swoop in a bit,
yeah,
we're very lucky with that advantage. I think that, you know, if we were doing this on our own, the tough things that happen, like we said, you know, there are times where if we'd have stopped, we'd have stopped and never started again.
Yeah.
This is from Marie, another long-suffering
fan
from the beginning.
Wonderful.
Marie, what is a tiny do-it-anyway thing that you've done this year that has proved to have an impact on yourself or others? She has pointed out that it doesn't have to be serious. It rarely is, although we did just get a bit serious. The podcast.
Yes, the podcast.
Because there were loads of reasons that we shouldn't have done this podcast. But it was on our list, and so we just thought, let's just try it. Let's just get the let's borrow the equipment. We're still borrowing it, thank you. And let's just see if we can, see if anyone listens, see if we have anything to say or to give. And really just the tiny step of saying we're going to do it and do episode one. Saying we're going to do it and doing episode one has made a big difference to our year and how we engage with people that we work with, people that we know, people on the other side of the world, people who maybe listen to this that we don't know.
Yes.
And we would, and it's become something that we definitely would like to continue and work out how to do better and how to make more successful.
Mm.
But it'll be a big learning curve for us. It's still, you know, it's still on such a small scale. But I like the energy it has. And I think it has affected other people. You know, and even if it's just a few, well, that's bloody brilliant.
Yes, absolutely.
We just get free life advice as well, so that's quite good. And then free therapy where we talk at you guys. So that's a big effect.
And just doing it, you know, we put our minds to do a cabaret that was a bit out of our comfort zone, and we did it, and actually impacting other people. We decided to collaborate and work with some excellent musicians that I think all really had a great time with us. I mean, the fact that we have allowed Connor to just be walking
release
around
his sequin jacket.
Sequin jacket at all times.
We really did create a monster with that one.
But just to allow that safe space for everyone to feel comfortable and just have a brilliant time and be something that maybe they're not every day, or find their inner diva.
And the fact that we raised enough money for 17 people to have counselling.
Yeah.
For 6 week sessions. Absolutely. That, you know.
Yeah.
I'm really glad we were able to do that, because that was so important to us.
Absolutely.
And we could have done something a lot smaller.
Yeah. From just doing it, we have just had the most amazing connections with different people.
Yes. It's been brilliant for networking. And And the more you practice something, the more you do it, the more you get braver.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, good question, Marie.
Thanks, Marie.
Jess, luck. Another one. So
you get a gold star, Jess, for sending in good... We've saved your other questions to use as podcasts.
So Jess, thank you. And you say, what is your massive out there dream?
Because we asked her that question on her podcast. Because it is interesting to have like, oh, what are you doing next year? What do you want to do in 5 years? But the massive out there dream is... Sometimes I find that really hard to imagine because it does require some courage, doesn't it?
I think next year has a different... I think generally it has a different energy. That's what I would say about everything, really. So I don't really know where it's going, but at one point, when we were looking at touring Hugh, we had talked about, we had been encouraged by somebody that we were taking advice from about trying to get Hugh into the West End.
Stop laughing.
But getting it into a London venue, you know, because...
Who was that?
Jason Ward.
Okay.
He champions us.
He does.
Wonderfully, and we're never quite sure why. But
no, never sure why.
He has given us some excellent advice, and
we really, must talk to him again.
We really love talking to him. We'll do that in January.
Okay.
But he'd really pushed us to sort of really think outside the box with Hugh. And I found that quite exciting for a time. Now, I don't really feel that maybe that's Hugh's path now. But that's not to say that the next thing can't go on that journey. Creating something that is successful wherever it goes.
Yes.
Not just local. We love local, but for us to be brave enough to book and tour and go.
An original thing.
Yeah. We've had some ideas.
That is, I guess that is the big dream, isn't it?
Mm.
It's massive.
Mm. So we actually are making money from putting out shows.
Yeah.
To small theatres initially.
Yeah. And I think another massive dream is to somehow be able to connect and encourage other creatives. Mm. And we're never really sure what form that's going to take, which is why we kind of push doors, like with the podcast or with different things. It has always been something we've kind of been reaching for, but can't see a clear path on yet. So I would put that in the massive dream box, part of our job being having a creative network that we...
Because everyone's giving it a go and everyone wants to feel supported. And when people are feeling that they just haven't... that they don't know what to do next or where to go or whether they should, it is brilliant to have a network that you can go, what do you think? And actually have someone that you can trust. Go for it. Or
because there's been people that we've relied on for that, but it would be nicer if it was easier to find.
Yeah.
Personally, like, a massive dream would be to be able to look back retrospectively and know that I started something in my late 30s that was a big career change and it was a success and I was being paid for it regularly and it was my job and I was still able to eat. That would be, you know, to be successful in a career that I started when, you know, perhaps some people would say it wasn't the best time to start or change. For me, that would be a massive deal. And the world tour.
The world tour, yeah. Where are we starting with the world tour? We've got California, we've got to get out to.
California, got a venue there, got a venue in Adelaide. So anywhere between that, if anyone...
We've got a few in Australia, actually.
Oh, yeah.
We've got Sweden.
Sweden.
Belfast.
Cork.
Cork, yeah.
There you are. Does that constitute a world tour?
Well, yeah, I think it starts it, doesn't it?
Yeah. Force ourselves on all the countries in between.
Wales.
Wales, yes. Don't do the accents, Joni. Yes, so Massive Dreams, successful West End production. Brilliant creative community. Wages.
Yes.
World tour.
Okay.
So sorted.
If you want to be any part of that, you know where we are.
Yep, stick with us. Buy us a van. The Massive Dream would just be a car that works so we could get to places.
With a driver, preferably.
Oh, a driver and a mini fridge.
Yeah.
Well, we hope you've enjoyed. I don't know if we will. Will they have enjoyed that?
I don't know.
Thank you so much. If you took the time to ask us a question, we really appreciate you helping us provide content.
Yes. Yeah. And some things that we just thought we'd never talk about.
Yeah.
So we really appreciate you listening to all of our lovely questions and answers.
We hope you found some inspiration from our ramblings, as always.
And thank you for being part of our journey. So,
thank you for your questions, and thank you for being with us while we
just do it anyway.